Hi, I'm Danae Benton.
Hey, y'all. I'm Felicia Fitzpatrick.
Hi, this is Lynn Nottage.
Hey, I'm Candace Marie Woods, and you're listening to the Call and Response podcast.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the final episode of Call and Response podcast season 4 with Felicia Fitzpatrick. And y'all, it is the season 4 finale. Already. I mean, it feels apropos that it's on the final Friday of Black History Month, but I cannot believe another season has already gone by. I hope you all are feeling as full as I am because these interviews really do lift up my spirits every time. And I can't thank y'all enough for the support you've given over 4 seasons, coming back episode after episode to hear the stories and perspectives of these incredible Black artists we have in our community. But there's so many more, so stay excited, stay hyped, stay thrilled, because we will be back with season 5 before you know it. But in the meantime, during this upcoming hiatus, make sure you're telling your friends, lovers, parents, neighbors, and random strangers on the subway to subscribe. And if you want extra credit, please rate and review us on iTunes. And I'm sure you're already following us on social media, but just in case, we're on Facebook and Instagram at Call and Response NYC and on Twitter at Call Response NYC. And while you're at it, why don't you look up our website, callandresponsepodcast.com. But if you're like, Felicia, I'm still sad. What am I supposed to do without new Call and Response episodes every week? Well, you can drown your sorrows in everyone's favorite, ice cream at the Museum of Ice Cream, or you can distract yourself by attending the Subway Silent Disco. Both have affordable tickets on Gold Star, and so you know there are plenty of other ways to keep yourself occupied until we are back with Season 5. Because y'all, say it with me, that is just the beginning with Gold Star. They provide affordable tickets to theater, comedy shows, concerts, and so much more. So download Gold Star, and let's make some memories, y'all. And I know, every week I'm like, I'm so hype, I'm so excited, I'm so thrilled. It's a catchphrase officially, just to me and my mom maybe. But I'm particularly excited today because I just met this person, but I already like, I feel like we click because I'm really excited to talk about, we have Texas roots.
Yep.
And I just already love the way your mind works. But you may have seen them as Diana Ross in Ain't Too Proud on Broadway, or maybe Book of Mormon, Nice Work If You Can Get It, Catch Me If You Can, and Hairspray. It is Candace Marie Woods, y'all.
Hey.
thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me.
I don't mean to gush too much right up front, but I'm just like very excited to get into it today because I think you have such an exciting, specific, and like important perspective on this industry. The intersection of Blackness and performing arts, like, mm-hmm. I'm ready to get into it. But yeah. I'd love to know, how did you first get involved in performing arts?
So I am from Garland, Texas, Dallas, Texas.
Right.
I trained in Plano.
Okay.
And I trained as a dancer. And that school, Chamberlain School of Ballet, flew me out to LA to be a part of a dance convention that a bunch of dancers were there to be seen and scouted by talent agencies and representation and all that stuff. So I was one of the girls who went out there, and they were just like, okay, they just asked a question to everybody. Does anybody here sing? Does anybody here act? Does anybody do anything else outside of dancing? And everybody was like, no. Mm. And I was like, well, I guess I sing a little bit, tiny bit. And so they were like, great, we'd love to send you out for a mock audition for Hairspray because we think you could actually have a career in this industry. Wow. And I was like, what? because I honestly thought that I was just going to grow up and be like a concert ballet dancer.
Oh, really? That's what you wanted to aim for? Wow.
I mean, I loved ballet and I loved dancing. Mm-hmm. But growing up in Texas, you know, there was some stuff. I have a love-hate relationship with it. So I actually was really excited about the idea of doing something that I loved, but expanding it to a different parts of other things performing that I liked as well.
Right.
I went in for this little mock audition because I wasn't supposed to book anything.
Yeah.
And then I ended up booking that tour. The Hairspray tour was out in California. And they were like, we'd love for you to join. And I was like, cool. I'm going to go finish high school real quick.
Just real quick.
I tell people, oh, yeah, no, I just really wanted to finish my studies. And like, you know, and then I was like, no, the truth of the matter is I'm a big scaredy cat, and was like, oh, no, I could never do that. That's not me. Like, I'm not good enough for that. I always walked around with that in my head. And my therapist might give you an explanation of why, but I won't right now.
A little bit of imposter syndrome.
Probably. From the time I actually got on stage, you know, I would have a great time on stage, but then be confused as to why people were like, oh my God, wow, you're so great. Like, that was such a weird...
The surprise they had about you being great.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
I even cringe a little bit on the inside after saying that. But in any case, booking that show was kind of the start of my realization that, oh, this might be something that I'm going to end up doing as an adult. And then I got called back in to be a part of the Broadway production in February of my senior year in high school.
Wow.
And I was like, I'm ready. Let's go.
So, I mean, I have a lot of questions. But first and foremost, you know, I wonder... Or maybe I'll say it a different way. Did you feel like you had any... Let me say it the other way. Who were your artistic inspirations and influences when you were studying ballet and starting to pursue musical theater? Did you feel... I mean, I guess I think of, like, we had Alvin Ailey, but, like, Misty Copeland has, like, blown up the game in terms of, like, mainstream representation.
Mainstream, yeah.
You know?
Yeah, mainstream. I got a chance, and I love my dance school. Let me just be very clear. Like, Kathy Chamberlain took me under her wing, and she is the reason I am where I'm at today. Mm. Like, she's always had such a belief in me, and she made a lot of things possible. Even when there was, like, a little bit of racism circling around me from parents and from all these other little systematic things that you would experience, she always kind of kept me close. And so she introduced me to Lauren Anderson, who was a company dance member at Houston Ballet. Okay. The first black dancer that I had got a chance to meet, who was a company member, a principal, and was like badass, like so amazing. And I kind of was like starstruck a little bit when we met because I didn't know who she was before, but after having all these conversations with my dance instructor about who she was and how important she is, and I just felt like, oh wow, that it boosted a little bit of confidence in me to be able to witness that for the first time. I'd heard of Alvin Ailey, I'd heard, you know, Harlem,
a dance theater of Harlem,
yeah, but I'd never been that close to seeing someone. And so Lauren Anderson was my Misty Copeland. Like,
okay,
she really was like the person who helped me see, oh, okay, yeah, I'm going to do brown tights. I think that looks better. I'm going to do brown shoes. It elongates the line for me to be brown on top and brown on the bottom.
Right. I was going to ask you about that with ballet. Like, did they try to put you in pink ballet tights?
They weren't trying to do anything. They were just doing what it was. Mm. The norm is you wear pink tights, you wear pink, you know, ballet shoes, pink point shoes, and that's because you had white dancers who were that was the closest shade to their skin. So, and it looks beautiful. It's not, you know, not to say that you can't wear pink tights, but I'm saying I was very, very adamant about having my brown tights because not only did it make sure I was representing myself fully, but it also just looked better. Like the lines were longer and just look clean to me.
Yeah. I like that you advocated for yourself in that way.
My mom definitely helped with that too.
Shout out to moms.
Moms. Man.
So, and going back to the other moms, you know, who maybe reacted with surprise to you being good. I mean, I hear that. I'm like, of course that had to have some type of effect on you.
There was just a lot of, well, why is she in the center and why is she wearing, you know, why is she wearing those tights? Why is she having to do that? Like, that's not what it is. And I was younger, so I might not have heard everything, but mm-hmm. I definitely felt that energy from a few folks. I didn't care.
Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah.
Because, you know, my mom definitely instilled that in me. I am who I am. Like, this is who it is. And if you don't like it, I mean, I'm not going to apologize.
Right.
I don't have a time for that.
Right, right.
And also, I'm 7. Like, yeah. Why are you hating on a 7-year-old?
Yeah, they're very insecure.
Let me live.
That's so interesting. Especially when you're so young, those comments, I just imagine seep into your psyche, to anyone's psyche, like, somehow. And so that's frustrating.
Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, yeah. So you persevered. You said, fuck the haters.
Yep.
And you booked the gig.
Yes. Surprisingly shockingly to myself. Yes,
and
that
so,
happened.
So had you been familiar with musical theater, like the canon, so to speak, before you started doing that mock audition and everything?
I did a little theater growing up. Okay. I did The Wiz with Logan, actually. Back in 2003, 2004.
I
met Logan, actually. That's funny.
Okay.
I did a few little things, like high school things, and I think I did Charlotte's Web, Gypsy, anyway. It's not important. I definitely played a newsboy in Gypsy. That was cool. Not a lot.
So Hairspray was the first, like...
That was, like...
big foray.
Yes.
So then the transition to New York City from somewhere like Garland, Texas, and I know you went out to California too, but what was that first year like here for you?
Well, I trained at School American Ballet when I was about 14. So I'd been to New York before and I loved it. I mean, yeah. I was like, okay, this might be where I want to live.
Wow.
And I remember writing down, because I believe in writing things down if you want them to happen.
Mm.
I remember writing that down, that I wanted to be a performer in New York City, because that's where I felt like the most free.
I love that.
And I hadn't experienced any other place in the country, really. Mm-hmm. So 3 years later, that move was actually pretty smooth for me, and that, like, I just felt really good being in a place that I remembered being a spot where I felt the most, well, freer than I had.
Mm-hmm.
Free, and I use the word free because you don't realize what you're repressing, or you don't realize that you are you are repressing anything until you step out of what you know, which for me was I would always kind of make myself smaller and don't speak out too much and don't be too loud, and brown tights is a lot, but you know, like there was always like a feeling of trying to just shrink myself to make everybody else comfortable.
And censoring yourself almost.
And just because of what the climate is and was in Texas about, you know, just that underlying racism that's just always there.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that New York is like perfect, but New York was different.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt pretty good. That transition was pretty cool.
Well, and what was it like when you were here when you were 14? I mean, you were free, but like, were you scared to take out the big bad apple? Like, you were just excited.
I was super excited. And I think the only time that I truly, truly enjoyed being in Times Square was when I was 14.
Fair enough. Yes.
Because that's when I was like, oh my gosh, this is the city.
Right.
And now I'm like, get me out.
How fast can I walk through? Yeah.
Yes.
No. Yep.
Yeah, you know, no longer a tourist, but that it's a magical place. It really is. And Times Square is still very magical. There are moments where I'll look up and I'll be like, God, right. I work here.
Right.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. And then someone will bump into me and I'm like, okay, all right, I'm moving.
I'm back to reality. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But it's like, you're inspiring 14-year-olds now that are here, you know?
Yeah. Visiting, yeah.
Which is very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
So what do you think, one of the biggest lessons you learned during that year you moved here when you were 17?
The biggest lesson I think that I learned was to trust myself and to, really listen to myself, because it turns out I thought I was my worst critic, and I really did. But it turns out, like, it's a tough business,
mm-hmm.
and people, you know, it's a competition a lot of the time. You've just got to be strong in yourself, and you have to be sure of who you are. And obviously at 18, that is happening at the same time. Yeah. And, you know, there's this feeling of needing to just make sure that you have your grounding and make sure that you know who you are. So I don't know. I guess I would say trusting myself and not listening to the haters, just continuing to like stay in who
your
I know
truth.
I am.
Yeah, absolutely.
So can you tell us about like your coming out process? Did that happen while you're here in New York?
No. Okay. So I came out in 2017 when I was out in Berkeley, actually.
Oh, okay.
When we were out in Berkeley, Berkeley is really close to Oakland, and Oakland is like full of queer badass people
yes.
who just take up all the space. And
okay.
I went out to Oakland maybe once or twice, but I basically stayed in the Berkeley area. The energy of being in the Bay Area, and just, I don't know what it was, but I felt it, and I just wanted to be completely free and open and not worry about what other people. And so I came out, I think, just because I was in a place where I felt comfortable and that I saw other people like myself. And I'd never, ever been in a group of folk or, you know, been around community like that. I'd never experienced a group of people who were like myself in that way.
Hmm.
So I definitely felt more confident, and I came out because I'd met somebody and I just was like, oh, okay, I guess I gotta move in this and just be confident in that. It's not that I didn't know that I had tendencies to be interested in the same sex. I thought it was just a phase sometimes, or I would just write it off like, oh, you know, whatever, I'm just young and exploring. And then I fell in love, essentially, with a trans person who also identifies as non-binary. And we just, like, I learned a lot.
Yeah.
I learned a lot.
Another, like, freedom, like a freeing feeling, it sounds like,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
What is, like, a myth or a misconception about being a trans person or a non-binary person that you would want to, like, bust tonight?
They aren't people who are just confused. They're not just men wearing a dress or women wearing pants. I don't know.
Right.
There's so many myths. Fashion, gender. That's all these things are constructs. All of these things are, we've been taught that this goes here and this goes here and this is supposed to be this. And it's one or the other, or it's living in the binary. So when a person says that they don't conform or they're genderqueer or whatever, it's because there's a fluidity to our lives and there's a fluidity to who we are, and our experience does not just exist in one or the other. And so a trans person or a non-binary person, their experience is real and it's valid. And the one thing I would say is, yeah, it's real. It's real. And it's been around since the beginning of time. So we're just now starting to have a better understanding of it because the conversation is being had, thank God. But it's, that's one thing I would say. It's real.
Yeah. So in coming out too, I feel like there's a process of learning like language, culture, all of these things. Like what was that experience like for you?
Very stressful. Okay. And I'm going to be honest, like I would freak out because I would, and I know a lot of people do too, I'd freak out because I didn't want to mess up people's pronouns and I didn't want to like seem like I didn't understand or know. And I'm like essentially like a queer baby trying to sort through and figure out all of the language. And, and I had a very patient partner, who, kind of like helped me out and walked me through some things. And the one thing that he told me and the one thing they expressed to me was, this is not about you. And it's harsh. Mm. It's almost like that. I'm a sucker for, harsh,
like direct feedback.
Strong. I don't need nothing. Just
no sugar
chaser,
coating.
No sugar coating.
No chasing. Like, I like that. Yeah.
Give me the information. It's not about you. When a person comes up and says, please do not misgender me, or please, you know, your initial response is to feel like, oh my God, they think I'm a terrible person. Oh my God, they hate me. Oh my God, it's me. And you go into your brain about, oh, this sucks on my end, instead of realizing it's not about you. So if a person corrects you, or if a person is expressing to you like, hey, I would love if you could try a little harder, that's it's on you to like do better, but it's also not about you and how you're feeling in the moment.
Right. It's about supporting them.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And that can be tough, because sometimes I'll speak for myself. Sometimes I really did feel like I was hurting the other person, and it wasn't my intention. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, you know, you get better, you learn, you figure it out, you read, you research, you do the work. And if you care, which I obviously did very much, I wanted to make sure that I not only was doing the correct thing, speaking the right language, but having an understanding of it.
Right.
Because I'm not going to be able to do what you need me to do or go an extra step if I don't even know what the hell I'm talking about. Like, if I don't even know what this is.
Mm-hmm. And the meaning behind it.
Exactly.
Absolutely. Do you find yourself in educational moments now where you're, you know, having to teach people language and stuff?
Yeah, no, all that. Like, yes. And I take pride in that, because I think that it is important, and sometimes it can be a little draining, but at the end of the day, like, I want people to be able to come up to me and ask me like, why does this person like dress like this? Or is this, I don't know. I don't mind being the person, especially within the theater community, to shed light and knowledge and understanding so that we can progress more, because we should be like really listening to our trans and non-binary folk, because they are here, and we got to start having a better understanding of what that is.
I know that
queer folk in general.
Right. Totally. And the whole spectrum of not that,
all of
you
it.
Know, how do you think your artistry has changed since coming out?
The one thing that I have been trying to do really is step out of the, and not to say that I'm trying to leave Broadway. I love Broadway. I love the theater world. But I think what I'm trying to do is be a little more honest about who my artist is outside of all of that, which is very scary for me, because I've been so used to this grind and to this specific hustle, and so it's forcing me to face myself, to face my artist, because we've gone a little bit deeper in our person, in who we are, and so it's almost like looking in the mirror and being like, okay, so I gotta put this forward, because it's trying to come out, it's trying to emerge. I'm still working on that. But I have faith that I'll make it happen, because I do believe in myself. And absolutely. It's one thing that you have to have, especially when you're, you know, a minority. You gotta have that confidence and that self-esteem, that self-belief, that you can make anything happen in your life, because people are going to constantly tell you, no.
Right, I wanted to talk a little bit about that too, because I read your Marie Claire article, which was amazing.
thank you.
Yeah, no, I loved it. But you were telling a story in that interview about, and you don't have to put them on blast, but like one of the shows you were in, and you were cut out of a billboard photo, and I was like, what? What? I guess my question is, how do you not get discouraged in those moments? Because I feel like it would be so easy to say, you know what? I don't need to be a part of this space if this is the way.
But you know, it's like I feel like I didn't even then. I don't think I really truly knew what was going on inside me, how I was really feeling, because you get used to these tiny little things that happen, and you just push it aside, you know, that's where that repression comes in.
Right.
And it's like, you don't start to see the messiness of it until later. And you're like, oh shit, I could have dealt with that differently, or I could have expressed myself or got it out or had like a, but what I would say now, if I could talk to myself then, would be, you know, just to express the pain and the feeling to maybe a cast member, a person who I trusted, or talk to another person of color, another Black person about it, and or without coming across too difficult or whatever, because we get painted that as well.
Right.
Finding ways to get it out so it doesn't harbor and fester. But, you know, that's what I will say, because I do know that a lot of the times people, when they're trying to stay in an industry or they're trying to build their resume or they're trying to, you know, they don't want to come across as somebody that's not easy to work with or someone that, you know, has always got a complaint here and there. But I would say, you know, today in this climate, yeah, speak out, say what you need to say. Go to your management, talk to your company management, talk to the people that you need to talk to, and voice what's going on, because if it affects you in a negative way or if it affects you emotionally, that's going to transfer to the stage, which at the end of the day, we're trying to put on a show, we're trying to put on a production, and you don't want to have all that resentment and that these harbored feelings of not belonging in a production that you loved and you worked very hard, just as hard as everybody else.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So then on the flip side, with Ain't Too Proud, being an all, I guess, save one, like Black company, do you feel a different release of like, I can be my full self?
This is my first like time being with an entire cast of Black folk. And I love it.
Especially
love it.
I can't get over like Dominique being at the lead. Like, I just feel like that sets the tone.
She set the tone from the very first table read. I will never forget the feeling of being like, wow,
yes.
What's up, sis?
Right.
That really, and just the whole time I felt that family connection with this company.
Yeah.
And in even the new people that are coming in, there's just, you're welcoming to the family, you're welcoming them to the family, because it is that. And you know, Ain't Too Proud definitely holds a very, very, very special place in my heart, because not only did this show happen during a time of transition for myself and my career and my life, but then also like when I came out, like Ain't Too Proud has been there this whole time, and it's been transformative and a beautiful experience.
Love that. You're beaming right now just talking about it.
Yeah.
I
love this company.
What was your familiarity with like the temps and Diana Ross before joining the show?
Going to school in elementary.
Yeah.
Going in the car, listening to the temps, listening to Diana Ross, listening to Motown, listening to all of that every single day during the week. And then on Sundays, it was gospel. So Motown and gospel. That's what I grew up with.
Foundation. Right.
I remember specifically hearing I'm Gonna Make You Love Me for the first time when I was maybe about like 7 or 8. And I just, I was like, I love this.
Yes.
And I was so fascinated. I was like, those are the Temps and the Supremes together. I just,
I was such. Crossover. Yes.
I loved it. I really did. And I would mimic her. And
you know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know who didn't grow up loving Diana Ross.
Yeah.
She was like queen, diva, everything.
Extraordinaire.
Yeah,
that's true. What was it like booking it? And I mean, I know you've been with the show all around the country too, but like specifically on Broadway, like taking the stage as Miss Diana Ross.
I a few years ago, actually, I was doing Dreamgirls, and I will say that show is loosely based off. I know that you know, I've done my research, so she's not a huge fan.
Yeah.
That's okay. Like, loosely based.
the hand gesture, yes.
Loosely based. So I feel like I was studying her for quite some time, and I was super excited when I got the call that I was going to be playing her.
Right.
Not a loosely based character, right. But her. And it just, it was like, I don't know. I was like, yeah, this makes sense. And when I go on stage as Diana Ross, I mean, I get to embody this beautiful, strong, confident human being who sometimes is not myself. So it's actually, it's rewarding and it's an honor.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Did you do a lot of dramaturgy, like research and all that stuff?
Yes, yes. Yeah. I did on my own specifically for the Supremes, but then also we had dramaturgy our first week in Berkeley. We learned all about Detroit. We learned all about, you know, that time. Otis Williams was there, the founder and last living legend of the group, and he was decked out in a fabulous outfit.
Come on.
And I was like, wow. we got all the history. We got all the stuff.
So what was it like, though, working with Dominique and the rest of the company to kind of find these connections from the 60s and how they're still relevant today?
Yeah, it's very relevant today. And while we were in Berkeley, there were white supremacists walking around protesting.
The show.
Not our show, but just walking around with their anti everything else except for whiteness. And so, you know, you're living it.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we have progressed because that's what we do as people. And as time moves forward, we evolve and we progress. We can't help but do it. But it has absolutely not been enough.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we're in a time right now where, you know, it's almost as if our show, we playing the Temptations, getting on stage and playing these legendary characters during this time, it's almost reminiscent of that, in that we're standing in our truths today and allowing you to come in and witness all of us and not just the performance aspect, but all of us. And it's written in the show that's the most important part, I think, is that you get to see these characters for who they were as men and not just as performers and not just as, you know, whatever. And so now you're getting a chance to understand. It's not easy. It's just not easy to get on stage and smile at a group of people who might hate everything about who you actually are. And I have experienced that on stage, that feeling. I'm not going to speak for anyone else but myself. But I have experienced that feeling, especially recently with Donald Trump in office.
Mm-hmm.
And but we shall overcome. It's just one of those things.
Yeah.
I know that at the end of the day, music is going to continue to do what it does, and it brings people together.
Yeah.
That's what our show does. That's what the Temptations did.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we have. There are things that people love, and music is one of those things.
Yeah.
Bring us together. Let me come into your world and understand who you are as a person or who you are as an artist and then a person. It's a way to like usher people in.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a way to like really truly bring in, people who you might not think would even like the Temptations, but honey, they're amazing.
Right. I love that line specifically. I think it's when they're on the bus in the South.
You gotta take me all or nothing.
Right.
It's my, it's literally my profile status, because I will be on social media and you see all these people just cheering for the Broadway success, but silent when a person is shot in the streets, or silent when you've got, you know, injustices within the queer community.
Mm-hmm.
And it really does make me mad. I'm like, you cannot just take this part of me.
Mm-hmm.
You cannot
pick and choose, right?
And if you think that that's the kind of experience that I'm going to allow in my life, you are mistaken. Because I won't tolerate that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
No, and no one should. We shouldn't be doing that.
We
shouldn't be tolerating that kind of behavior anymore. All or nothing.
It is, I know, the idea of like people being willing to pay like and consume y'all as performers on stage, but not supporting you as people off stage is a fascinating, like disturbing thought to me.
Yeah, it is. And it's frustrating because you want to engage with your, and I guess I don't want to like talk shit about audience members.
Sure.
We are appreciative of the people who come and support. And obviously that's good for us. But at the end of the day, you want to make sure that what the audience is leaving with is the message. And so yes, have a good time. Sing, dance, live your life at the Temptation, like with the Temptations music, but also listen to this message because it is very, very relevant today.
And receive it.
Yeah.
That's an interesting thought too, because, and they talk about this in the show, but like the Temptations and the Supremes, I would say for that matter, like navigating crossover appeal back in the day of like, you have to also be liked by the white people. Do you think that's, tell me.
It is. It's a balance in knowing when you as a person will want to move forward with everyone, and then knowing when you as an artist and a person can move forward without that whiteness, you know?
Right.
Like, it's not always necessary. It's not always needed. I think Motown is what it is today and was so successful because there was a branching out and a reaching out. And I think that is very important because it also like brought people together and quite literally cut the line in between the people at concerts, cut that rope that separated people at concerts. Like, I feel like Motown did that. And that's good. That's great. But I also feel like there is a balance. You need to know, like, I don't have to be this. I don't have to aspire to be this in order to be seen, in order to be recognized, in order for it to be valuable and
right.
And worthy of success. So,
yeah. Allyship and uniting is good, but you can also stand in your own strength and blackness, you know?
You better sum it up, because that is exactly what I was trying to say.
No, yeah, you said it wonderfully, but it's the fact that I feel like black performers, actors, artists have to think about this in like a double conscious way is in and of itself is just like, it's another layer that white actors don't even fathom or think about. So it's just, it's a conversation that we have to keep having. But you got to get to your show.
I do.
But this has been so fun. I feel like this is only part one.
This is great. I love this. I love having these conversations. And yeah, I do. I get tripped up on my words a lot, but there's a lot that I need to say, and I need to get over that because people trip up on their words all the time. Yes. I've been quiet for a long time, so I feel like it's time to...
It's like raise your voice.
Yeah.
The final two questions to wrap up the podcast.
Okay.
Are as follows. One, if you could recommend a piece of black art, whether that's a musical, album, a TV show, a book, for our listeners to take in, what would it be?
So I this is off the top of my head, but I want to express this because I feel like it's important, especially within the black community. We need to read a little bit more about our queer artists, especially the ones that were quieted and maybe not as out back in the day. I've been reading Robin Crawford's book about Whitney. Mm-hmm. And I kind of fell into a Whitney rabbit hole of just looking at videos and studying and seeing her.
Yeah.
And I see myself in her. I see myself in her. I see myself in Janelle Monáe. I see myself in, Josephine Baker. I see myself in these artists who had, Janelle, thank God, had the opportunity to come out. But it saddens me to know that our community, the Black community, can be very, very uneducated and harsh when it comes to queer folk. And I only say that because Black people are queer as well. And I'm going to tell you why.
Tell us.
Because Black people, we have been seen as the strange and odd and not normal thing since the since we were shipped out here.
Mm-hmm.
So there needs to be like this understanding that you yourself, you may not be non-binary, you may not be trans, you may not be gay, lesbian, you may strictly be straight, but you are queer because you're Black.
Ooh, speak on it.
That's where my heart is. My heart's there because I find it to be really, really important for us to open our minds a little bit more. Mm-hmm. We want to be accepted within these communities and we want to be seen, but we also need to understand, we have to understand who we are and we have to understand the people who are a part of this community. And these are queer people. These are people like myself. I'm a part of the community.
Mm-hmm.
A song for you,
Robin Crawford. Have you watched either the documentaries on Whitney?
Yeah, I watched the latest one, mm-hmm. and it made me sad because mm-hmm. it painted her in such a. I didn't think it painted her in a light that this book is I'm getting to see.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also could see the homophobia in that documentary, and I just makes me sad because I'm like, if she were alive today. If she were living fully or experiencing life with what it is right now, I really feel like, I don't know, I can't speak for her. I feel like she would have came out. I feel like she would have embraced life a little bit more and had a reason because she could stop repressing all that stuff.
Right.
Have another reason to stay here.
Absolutely. That's a great recommendation.
I don't know. It's not theater. It's not, but it's...
Oh, it doesn't have to be. No, okay. That's great. And then the second is... Not any easier. If you give a shout out to a fellow Black artist, who would it be? Mm. And people are always like, Felicia, only one? To like, you want to do a top three? It's just to give some love, you know?
Listen, I love Janelle.
Me too.
When she came out with her coming out album, I don't know when she really came out.
Yeah.
But
I think shortly after, if anything. But yeah.
But that album, man, that was the same year that I came out. And I was like... I was just such a baby queer and that I just like needed everyone to know. And I just felt so good. And that album is just, I had it on every single day.
Yes.
Because she is also like theater chick. She's also an actress. And I've been vibing with her for a long time. So it's good to know that like,
that's just the way you make me feel.
Yeah.
Yeah, that album.
Love it.
I want Janelle Monáe to have a show on Broadway. And I want you to star in it. I'm now manifesting it. Let's write it down.
Yes.
Okay.
Oh, let me get some paper. I'm for real. I need to write that down.
Yes.
Yes.
If folks want to follow you on social media and follow your amazing journey, where can they do so?
Oh, well, you can follow me at CanDubs on Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on Facebook, but I'm mostly on Instagram.
Instagram's where it's at.
Yeah, it's
And yours is popping. I love your Instagram.
Oh, Fran, thank you.
Yes, y'all need to go follow. Well, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it.
I love this conversation. I appreciate it, too. You being able to talk about the intersection of queerness and Blackness and performing arts is like such an important conversation that we have to be having. And I know it's scary sometimes to like, you know.
You saw that. You saw me get a little scared.
Yeah, but it's important. And I know our listeners are going to love it. I really appreciate it. So thank you so much.
Thank you.
Yes. Until next time, y'all.